This is the Comics Alternative, episode 209, This and That. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Comics Alternative. I'm Derek.
And I'm Shay.
And we're two guys with PhDs, or working toward PhDs, talking about comics. And on this week's episode, I'm joined by my monthly manga co-host, Shay Henham, and we're going to talk about general stuff regarding comics. But before we get to that fun conversation, we want to let all of you know that this episode of the Comics Alternative is brought to you by the great people at Discount Comic Book Service. Go to their website, dcbservice.com, for all of your comics pre-ordering needs. There, you're going to find all DC, Marvel, Image, and Dark Horse titles at 40% off of the cover price if you pre-order. For all of the other publishers, you'll find that those discounts will be between 20 and 35% off of the cover price. And every single month, you're going to find some great specials. Sometimes those specials will be at 45% off of the cover price, sometimes at 50% off cover, but you know, often you can find discounts that are more impressive than that.
Like this month you can get bundles of Vertigo titles or the recent Young Animal line from DC for 50% off.
Yeah, they have a lot of bundles, and you can find discounts on individual titles as well by going to dcbservice.com. They'll take care of all of your comics pre-ordering needs. And after you do get your books there, please be sure to send them an email and tell them that the two guys with PhDs sent you. Well, Shay, for listeners of our regular weekly show, it may be a little unusual and perhaps unsettling, we'll see, to hear your voice. And so, you know, well, first and foremost, I want to thank you very much for filling in for Andy Kunkka.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, and I hope it's not unsettling for listeners of the regular show.
Oh, I'm sure it won't be. But, you know, I should explain to everyone why you're on and Andy Kunkka isn't. You know, this past weekend, Hurricane Matthew hit the East Coast, the Southeast Coast, and Andy lives in Florence, South Carolina. We weren't sure what kind of experience he would have with that hurricane, but it was a bad one. Both he and his wife Jennifer are okay, and their house is okay, but their neighborhood has no power, and they may have no power for the next week. So Andy, kind of at the last minute, he told me that he was not able to record this week's episode with me. So then we thought, well, do we want to cancel this week's regular review show? Do we want to try to do something different, kind of at the last minute, bring on another co-host? And we opted for the latter, thus you, Shay, being on the show.
Yeah, and hopefully I live up to the work that Andy usually does.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure you will, but we're not going to be talking about what Andy and I had been planning to discuss, because I think that would have been too much of a task to throw at you at the last minute. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned on a previous episode or two that Andy and I were going to be doing a 2-part series on recent crime comics, and we actually had planned on this week being the first of those two episode series. We were looking at quite a number of recent crime comics. So since Andy wasn't able to join us, and since the number of titles we were going to look at were probably just too much for you to read and be prepared to discuss, you know, within a 24-hour period, then we decided we're going to be postponing the crime comic series probably to early November. We're not exactly sure yet. Our original plan was to do one episode in October and then another one in November. We'll probably move them back to November, but keep listening, guys, and we will update you on what to expect. But in lieu of that, Shay and I thought that we would just talk about, well, whatever came to mind in terms of comics culture. We'll be right back.
I know you had mentioned wanting to talk about. There was a couple titles that you you sent my way that you had kind of wanted to briefly mention, but I wasn't sure how we were going to talk about recent comics news, which I know you mentioned you wanted to talk about, because I have recently not done a very good job of keeping up with that stuff.
Mm. Well, you know, the two titles that I sent your way are interesting, and I guess don't want to so much do an official review of these, but I do want to mention them and alert our listeners to their existence. Now, these are a couple of titles that we have received over the past month and a half from listeners, self-published work, people letting us know what they do and asking us to read it and possibly talk about it on a podcast episode. But before we get into these titles or mentioning these titles, I should say that we get emails all the time from people who say that they're creators, they're just starting out, they self-publish, and they want us to take a look at their work and review it on the show. And we appreciate people getting in touch with us about that. Sometimes we've been able to discuss their titles on the podcast. Sometimes we're not able. And if it's the latter, more times than not, it's a function of time. We just don't have time to do the number of reviews that we would like to do for on the podcast. Other times, though, people send us titles that, as interesting as they are, really aren't up our alley. It's often, in fact, that we get people sending us work that they do that is, let's say, some kind of superhero narrative in some way, or it has that superhero mm-hmm. feel to it. Which, again, we appreciate people reaching out and letting us know what they're doing, but, you know, we don't focus on superheroes, especially mainstream superheroes. Now, more ironic takes, let's say, on the – or maybe self-aware takes on the superhero genre, yeah, we've discussed those in the past. But when people send us superhero-ish comics, you know, we wonder if – they're listening to the Comics Alternative podcast, or if they're just sending us, you know, something that's been emailed out to a number of podcasters and people in the media, and something like a form letter. And that happens, unfortunately. So the vast majority of the stuff that we get from listeners, we don't read, or we don't have the time to discuss on the show, let's say. But these two titles I thought were interesting, and maybe we can say a few words about them. Now this first one was sent to us last month, and this is Paper, Rock, Scissors, and Stuff Wars. That's the title, Paper, Rock, Scissors, and Stuff Wars. And it's not and stuff, it's N apostrophe, so that's the N sound. And this is the creation of Luanga Lu Nuame and George Leon. Now, Leon does the art and Lu Nuame does the writing. And this is the first issue of a proposed miniseries. And when Lou emailed me several weeks ago, he gave me a little information about this comic. And so I want to, you know, highlight some of the things that he wrote me about. He said he took the game, you know, paper, rock, scissors that everyone knows and transformed it into a planet-wide battle between living versions of all the elements. So in this first issue, you have a community of, or I guess a tribe, a city, a town of paper, and then you have a community of rocks, you have a community of scissors, and then there are others as well, right? He said he thought of the idea, Lou did, after speaking to a friend's uncle who grew up in rural Mongolia. He says, I was surprised to find out that they play rock, paper, scissors there. I realized how universal this game was and decided to knock it up a peg and make it into an actual war. And that's what we have playing out in this first issue. And in fact, this first issue that he gave us a copy of that actually was free on Amazon for a little while back in September. This is the chapter one of a proposed 5-chapter graphic novel. And right now, this is being kickstarted. So if you go to Kickstarter and do a search for Paper, Rock, Scissors, and Stuff Wars, or you can do a search for Zelpha Comics. That's Z-E-L-P-H-A Comics. You're sure to find this. And as of this date of recording, which is the 10th of October, there are 21 days to go. They've already met their goal of $942. So it's a successful Kickstarter, but you can still get in on the ground floor. You got 21 days to go, probably about, I guess, 19 upon the release of this episode. So definitely check those guys out. So Shay, now you had a chance to look at Paper, Rock, Scissors and Stuff Wars. What are some of your thoughts?
Yeah, I was able to read it last night and again earlier this morning. And since then, I have been anticipating that question and trying to think about how how exactly I want to answer this, because I do this show with you and I've been writing about comics online for several years, and so I am familiar with these kinds of emails from people who self-publish these comics, and they send it out to critics and reviewers and podcasters, and I think there is something really admirable about that willingness to make work, to actually start and finish the work, to put in the labor necessary to bring it into being. And so it's difficult to talk about these things that are very obviously labors of love, and because you don't want to you don't want to be too harsh, you don't want to be too mean, but you also want to be honest about the work. And so for me, Paper, Rock, Scissors and Stuff, it didn't work for me. That's not to say that it's by far and away not the worst comic I've ever read. But it does a lot of the things that kind of really instantly turn me off of comics, and stories in general. Just the general conceit of taking rock, paper, scissors and stuff, and kind of translating that very simple basic game that doesn't really have any sort of narrative. It's just that conceit alone is something that I think ordinarily I would kind of make me stop reading something, but that's more of a personal thing than anything else. But so I think this book, it really just was not up my alley. It really was the kind of thing that I wouldn't ordinarily read. I ordinarily wouldn't be interested in. But again, I do really admire that willingness on the part of of Luanga Nuame and of George Leon and everybody else involved to actually have the idea and to make it and to follow through with actually producing this thing, which is something that most people, regardless of how good or not good they are at drawing or writing or making comics, they just don't follow through on that. The most important part of making comics, which is to actually make the thing. So it didn't work for me, but there are admirable qualities about it. But you seem to be a little more into it than I was. What were some of your thoughts on it?
Yeah, no, I thought I liked Leon's art. I thought that was interesting. The conceit, I think, is a little wacky, but that's part of its charm, right? Mm-hmm. And in reading through this first issue, there's okay on a realistic level. Now, of course, we're assuming that there's no such thing as sentient paper, rock, and scissors, of course. Mm-hmm. But, these cultures are all living on the same planet, but they're not aware of each other's existence, which is a little unrealistic as we get into this first issue. And we're thinking, okay, why don't they know of each other's existence until this story begins? Because the cultures have been around for so long. But again, this is one of those things that you just have to suspend belief, because this is definitely not a realistic narrative, and mm-hmm. they're just having fun. See, it just strikes me that this is one of those comics, what you find many times with web comics, right? A way to tell a story that engages a number of people, sit back, enjoy the ride, don't think too much about it, and just have fun doing it. And I think mm-hmm. that's the way that I came to rock Paper, Rock, Scissors, and Stuff Wars. So, you know, there it has a lot of potential. Now, how it reads as a complete, what I guess will be a five-issue or five-chapter graphic novel, I don't know. But this first issue seems to kind of throw you into this strange world. Apparently, the second issue, from what I've seen, from what Louis Nwame has mentioned in an email, is where you're going to have a lot of character development. So with this first issue, you get a sense of who these communities or who these cultures are in a broader sense, right? So who are the paper folk? Who are the rocks and the scissors? And there's even plastic. So we get the communities, but I guess we're going to get into more detail with individual characters with issue two. So, you know, it's something different. It's something that we normally don't discuss on the Comics Alternative. And it's not often that we talk about current Kickstarter campaigns on the show. But again, given the fact that, you know, we had this problem at the last minute with the hurricane, and we wanted to just do a show and talk about, you know, whatever, I thought I'd throw this into the mix.
I think one of the other books that we talked about, I actually was, I don't even know how to begin to describe how that book made me feel.
Okay, well, okay, before we discuss this, and this title is Esoteric Dialogue. Now, let me begin with this caveat, okay? This is something else that was sent to us, I believe, in September. And Esoteric Dialogue is written by Scott Buffus with art by Matthew Salazar. Now, last week, Scott Buffus, and I'm not sure if you pronounce it Buffus or Bufus. It's B-U-F-I-S. And if you're listening to this, Scott, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing the name. But he became a podcast patron of ours last week. But we had thought about discussing this topic or this title before he became a Patreon supporter, because he sent us the first two issues of Esoteric Dialogue, and, you know, like I said, about a little over a month ago. And we thought, okay, well, maybe we can work it into one of our episodes. And then he became a Kickstarter – I'm sorry, a Patreon supporter, which is great. I mean, I think that it's wonderful that he is being a patron of ours in this way. And we mentioned on last week's episode that, you know, he's a new patron, and we even mentioned the title and the web address of Esoteric Dialogue. It's not because – he's backing us on Patreon that we're discussing this, because we had planned on discussing this at some point anyhow. So I just wanted to mention that kind of as a setup. But Esoteric Dialogue, you can find out more about this by going to their website, which is Two Tone Comics, TWOTONECOMIX.com. And that's their, I guess, the publishing arm, right? Their self-publishing arm. And right now, you can find information on the first two issues of Esoteric Dialogue. Now, you were about to say that you weren't exactly sure how to describe your reaction to this.
Right. I was going to say that it kind of made me feel insane. At least this first issue did. You know, like you said, the series is called Esoteric Dialogue, and the first two issues that we have are the first one is almost entirely a kind of a self-contained story, and the second one is two unrelated stories that are unrelated to each other, but also to what we see in the first one. And this, you know, we get the beginning of both issues, we get this kind of text that sets up this the series or the issue as a very kind of like a play on conspiracy theories and stuff like that. But the first one, which I think is actually really, really fantastically drawn, it really puts me in mind of like Crumb in certain spots, but also like Al Columbia. Although not as kind of gory or graphic, you know, I thought it was fantastically drawn, but it's also a book that it plays on these kind of like Jewish, like anti-Semitic Illuminati conspiracy theories. central banking conspiracy theories, reptile people conspiracy theories. And it's kind of the first thing we see is, I think, very clearly Alex Jones. But what really struck me about this is that I couldn't figure out if this was written by someone who actually believes these things or not, because it's like anyone listening who's like ever spent any time on YouTube watching some of these very bizarre videos that are crudely animated about how like central banks are secretly controlling the world, and how central banks are the reason we like went into Iraq, and how we're going to invade Iran or North Korea next because they have central banks that are actually controlled by their government. Anyone who's watched those knows exactly what I'm talking about. Those videos are just on a completely different plane of existence. And I think Bufis does a really excellent job of approximating the kind of sincerity with which those videos are delivered. And it really gives the impression that, you know, this is like an earnest belief. And I don't know if it is or if it's not, but the book is really, I think, wonderfully enjoyable in that on that level, as something that is this kind of almost psychopathic artifact that just makes no sense whatsoever, but is weirdly entertaining and weirdly funny. If you've never seen one of those videos, it's really it's like a really difficult feeling to describe. I think it really gets really close to that that genuine belief in these absurd things.
You know, I think this is the only time that the name Alex Jones has ever come up on the Comics Alternative.
I'm surprised, because he's a thrilling and frightening human being.
Yeah. At least I don't think it's ever come up. But you know what? All that you mentioned in terms of that first issue of Esoteric Dialogue, I agree. And in fact, when Scott first emailed us again a little over a month ago about Esoteric Dialogue, he described it this way, and I'm reading from his email. He says that each issue contains hand-drawn short stories. So this is not, created on a computer, the illustrations. Each issue contains hand-drawn short stories that take place in strange realities inspired by conspiracy theories, alternative history, and psychedelia. The first issue contains the story of five kids in the woods role-playing as the Illuminati and playing out their dark fantasies in a tabletop board game that reflects events in our own history. And, you know, as you were saying, it's a little difficult in this first issue to determine where the tone is. In other words, what is the author's attitude toward the subject matter? Is Bufis making fun of some of these conspiracy theories, the kind of things that you had mentioned earlier, right, in these YouTube videos? Is there something in which he may be buying into to a certain degree? I mean, I didn't think that this was anything polemical. I guess I just wasn't sure where the author was in the way of, you know, these kind of conspiracy theories. But that's okay. I mean, I think that pulling out of the narrative in that way, where we're not exactly sure what the author thinks about his subject matter, I mean, that's a fine narrative strategy. Now, I think had this second issue that we also have a copy of, had it continued this, let's say, Illuminati storyline, I may have wondered more if maybe this comic is a way for them to voice certain concerns that you may find on those YouTube videos or, you know, on, you know, an Alex Jones broadcast. But it's very different, because you're right. And, you know, whereas the first story, the first issue is one long story that deals with this role-playing game, this Illuminati-esque game. The second issue is made up of, well, actually more than one story. And the first episode, or the first story in the second issue, is called Space Snob Adventures. And it's kind of a strange romp, if we want to call it that, through space, where some weird things happen and there's no ultimate resolution. It's just kind of a fun story. And in this in many ways, it gets me back to what you were saying about that first issue of Esoteric Dialogue. It does remind me of some of the things that we would see, if not in maybe contemporary mini-comics, but maybe underground comics from the 1970s, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just about to say, I was taking another look at this as you were talking, and I mean, the second story we get, A King Among Them. Yeah, A King Among Them is, you know, that it ends with this sequence of a character kind of being engulfed in this goopy, viscous, black liquid. And it's, you know, I think apropos that you said it reminds you of contemporary mini comics and contemporary kind of alternative comics, because as I was reading that, I was thinking specifically of some illustrations that Michael DeForge has done. Mm. The way that black liquid is drawn, the kind of texture that it has, the viscosity that it has, really reminds me of the way that he draws a lot of liquids. So I totally agree that Salazar is kind of intentionally or not invoking both classic underground comics, but also his contemporaries.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had not thought of it with the story A King Among Them, which to me is the highlight of issue number two. I didn't think of this in terms of Michael DeForge, but, you know, there's certain panels, there's certain illustrations mm-hmm. that have that DeForge-esque feel to it. Although I think most of the story in terms of the highly detailed line work mm-hmm. of, you know, most of the realistic aspect of this strip is, you know, definitely not what you would find in the work of Michael DeForge, but you know, I do enjoy the art that we get mm-hmm. from Matthew Salazar, and the stories from Bufus are definitely strange and offbeat, and I think it's something worth checking out. Well, you know, both of these comics that we've discussed are worth checking out. So if you want to find out more about Esoteric Dialogue by Scott Bufus and Matthew Salazar, go to the website of Two Tone Comics, and it's comics with an X, so twotonecomics.com. And for more info on Paper, Rock, Scissors, and Stuff Wars by Lou Nwame and George Leon, go to zelphacomics.com. That's zelphacomics.com.
So what else did you want to get into today? Because I know you wanted to kind of have a freewheeling discussion about some other stuff.
Well, you know, one of the things we have not talked about on the manga show, which is when you and I usually get together, is mm-hmm. the work that you do for other blogs, other websites, the comics mm-hmm. reviewing that you've done in the past and also currently do. Now, you know, we've alluded to it in passing. Like, for instance, we'll discuss a title and you say, yeah, I wrote a few words about this on, and then you'll mention it. But we really don't go into detail about your role as a reviewer on websites other than the Comics Alternative. So, well, let me ask you, what kind of review work are you doing now?
Most of the review work I do is primarily at the AV Club at this point. So the Onion AV Club, they do a me and Tim O'Neill and Oliver Sava and Caitlin Roseberg. Every Tuesday we do we each do like a small 500 word or so capsule review of a book, and it all goes up as the comics panel feature. And so that I do regularly. I've got, you know, something on something every week. And that's, I think at this point, that's really the only reviewing that I'm doing. But I do write features and conduct interviews with people for Paste magazine. And I think a couple months ago at this point, I wrote about a brief history of erotic comics and sex comics for The Establishment. And yeah, you know, I just did a interview with Anya Davidson for Banned for Life that she is coming out, I think this week through Fantagraphics for Pace Magazine, so that should be up soon. But for reviews, anyone listening can check out short reviews I do. And the other people, you know, Oliver and Tim and Caitlin, they are also doing good work there that I continue to enjoy to read. And then at the AV Club, we also do a back issues feature, which is typically Oliver, Caitlin, myself, and a friend of mine, J.A. Michelin, where we'll do it ends up being about 2,000 words, where we'll do like 500 word back and forths about a book. The next one we have coming up is Peter Milligan and Mike Allred's run on X Factor, and then the last one we did was on the first volume of Akira. So that's a month, that's monthly, and people can look for that too. I hope we do a good job. I'm proud of the work we're doing there. But yeah.
Now, you mentioned your interview with Anya Davidson, and what did you think of Banned for Life, which comes out later this month?
Yeah, I really like Banned for Life. It's, you know, the kind of work that I really tend to gravitate towards. You know, I like a lot of the stuff Fantagraphics put out, but Anya Davidson's work in particular is something I get really excited about. Her, the way she draws is just right up my alley, and I love. And it's something we talk about in the interview is her color palette, but particularly her choice of colors and what she colors with in Banned for Life to get that kind of weird, almost black felt poster texture.
Yeah.
That's so I really enjoyed Banned for Life. I think Anya Davidson is a terrific cartoonist, and I really enjoy reading. I really, really enjoy reading her work. She shouts out Tadanori Yoku, who is a Japanese poster artist from the 1970s, who I really love. So I was excited about that when she mentioned him in our interview. But yeah, I thought Banned for Life was great. Have you gotten a chance to read it yet?
No, I haven't. And I'm looking forward to doing so. If I'm not mistaken, there was something from Anya Davidson in last year's Best American Comics volume. Is that correct? Do you know?
I don't do a very good job of keeping up with the Best American Comics volumes, but it wouldn't surprise me. She's always putting out, you know, small mini comics or zines. I know she also had, I don't know if it's out or yet, out or not. I know she was doing a, you know, a pretty good size length kind of mini comic for Retrofit, but as part of their I think spring, maybe fall 2016 lineup that they kickstarted. But yeah, I don't know. I should try and get a copy of that. But
yes, in fact, I just looked it up because we discussed it last year. You know, as we usually do, it's our penultimate show every year where Andy and I will look at that year's volume of Best American Comics. And so in last year's volume, which was edited by Jonathan Lethem, a selection from her School Spirits was in there. I thought I remembered that. Yeah.
That's weird because I thought School Spirits, the years where they count the Best American are all weird. So
right.
I just know that, School Spirits was actually the book of hers that, the first book of hers that I ever came across. So yeah, I'm not surprised to see it in at least one of those volumes of Best American Comics.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, you were saying that you interviewed Davidson. Did you do so? Is it a text interview? Is it a recorded interview?
We exchanged emails because I was actually in New York, so I was on planes and trains and in automobiles for 4 or 5 days, and we were trying to get it done at the last minute, and you know, I had to turn in the transcript, I had to file a transcript a couple days ago, so we didn't really have time to sit down and talk on the phone, so we just shot some emails back and forth, and which is nice. I like the freedom that format provides.
Because do you usually do interviews over the phone, or do you do them via email?
It depends. It depends on what, you know, the other person is comfortable with and what their schedule is like. I've done a lot of interviews via text, via email, and I've done I think just as many at this point on the phone. You know, when I interviewed Dan Clowes for the AV Club or Mike Mignola for Paste, I did I did it on the phone because, you know, they had 30 minutes in the middle of their day, and that was, you know, what worked best for their schedule. And other people are, you know, their schedule is more accommodating. It's more kind of, it's looser, and they have the freedom to spend a week exchanging emails with me. So it just depends on the person I'm interviewing and what the situation at the time is.
So how do you make contact with the creators? Do you do so through their publicist, or do you try to contact them directly, if you can?
Yeah, some of it is, you know, I have an editor at Pace, Sean Edgar, who is a great guy. And sometimes, you know, people will come to him with stuff. You know, the Mike Mignola one came about because I think the press people at Dark Horse were trying to set up a bunch of interviews for, I think at the time it was the Frankenstein Underground series he was doing. And so Sean reached out to me because he knew I was a big fan of Mike Mignola, and he asked me if I would be interested. Other times it's, you know, publicists, I reach out to them. Like with Anya Davidson, I was interested in talking to her about Banned for Life because, I really enjoyed the book and I wanted to talk to her about it. And, so I reached out to Jack Cohen at Fantagraphics, who is a great press person. And other times, you know, Jack has come to me, you know, she was trying to set up interviews with people for Dan Klaus when Patience came out. And I, you know, I've worked with her over the last couple of years, and apparently she likes the work I do, and so she, you know, she reached out to me on that one.
She reached out to you for Dan Klaus?
Yes.
Okay. You know what?
I felt very honored about. I felt very gracious about.
I'm asking is I'm a little jealous and now a little ticked because right before, and maybe I asked too late, but before Patience, I had inquired about the possibility of an interview with Klaus, and mm-hmm. she said, no, he's not available for interviews.
Yeah, she was telling me that he does very few interviews. I don't know if it's just a personal preference or if it's a schedule thing, but I can pretty much guarantee you that if I wasn't writing about comics for the AV Club, if I wasn't a regular contributor there, I probably wouldn't have gotten that opportunity. I think it had more to do with the profile of the outlet that I could get the interview.
Right. And I understand that's something that, I mean, this has happened a number of times with us on mm-hmm. the Comics Alternative is that, you know, we don't have the cachet, I guess. We don't have mm-hmm. the pull that some media outlets do. I know mm-hmm. that, you know, there have been, you know, occasions where people say they don't have time for an interview with us, but yet they have time mm-hmm. for another outlet. But that outlet is a much bigger megaphone, let's say like mm-hmm. NPR. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the one hand, yeah, that makes sense to me. I understand that publicists and creators have to invest their times and energies the best way they can to get the most impact on a review. But there's another part of me that says, I'm pissed. Mm-hmm. And you know, we've even at times refused to do interviews when someone says, well, they won't do it the way that you normally do interviews, but if you change your format, in other words, if you send us 10 questions, mm-hmm. you know, via email, then we'll pass those on. We don't do those kind of interviews, and so we say thanks, but no thanks, as politely as possible. I'm just interested in how you go about getting the interviews. I mean, the vast majority of the occasions where we do interviews is reaching out directly to the creators. Mm-hmm. I prefer that. Because I think it cuts out the middleman, but there are times, the publicist, in other words, mm-hmm. but there are occasions where we have to go through the publicist. Either it's the publicist or the marketing department that comes to us about a potential mm-hmm. interview, or if it's difficult, if not impossible, to get in touch with the creator through the usual channels. In other words, they don't make their email address known. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, you go through the publicist. So, you know, we do what we can, but, yeah, it would have been great to have interviewed Klaus, but I'm glad that you got to speak with him.
Yeah, it was a humbling experience, mm-hmm. To say the least, but yeah, Preston Comics is a kind of a tricky, it might be too inside baseball for people listening who aren't interested in how this stuff works, but, it's a tricky game because you're trying to negotiate, you know, these, getting your authors in these high profile outlets. But yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from on that as well.
Yeah. Of course, you know, first and foremost, our main criteria when it comes to an interview is, you know, do we like the book and do we want to have the person on the show to talk about the title?
Yeah. So. That seems like pretty good criteria. Yeah. I try not to do any interviews with people who I'm not a fan of. That makes for kind of a tense and unenjoyable interview for everyone.
Yeah. Oh, no. We've never interviewed anyone whose work we do not respect. But, I mean, there are occasions – I was saying that there – more times than not, we reach out to creators whose work we really enjoy that we want – and we want to have them on the show. But there have been times that someone has reached out to us, let's say a publicist or even an artist on a rare occasion. And we didn't know who they were before. They sent us some of their stuff. And we liked it, and we said, yeah, sure. And in fact, a great example of this was several years ago, Isabel Greenberg. Do you know her work?
No, I'm not familiar with her work.
Okay, she had a book. Well, what did this came out in 2013? It was the very end of 2013 from Little Brown and Company called The Encyclopedia of Early Earth. And this was, I think it was Isabel's first book, because she'd done comics before, but I think this is her first book, definitely the first book with a larger trade publisher. And so when the publicist in December contacted, maybe it was November that they contacted us to see if we wanted to either review the book or to have Isabel on the show, Andy and I didn't know who she was. And so we got copies of the Encyclopedia of Early Earth. We both loved it. And I think the Encyclopedia of Early Earth was even one of Andy's top 10 comics of 2013, because we do that year-end episode where we talk about our favorite 10 releases of the year. So, you know, that was a great surprise. We didn't know it existed. Someone reached out to us, and we were bowled over.
Yeah, it's always, you know, wonderful when that happens. I think, what is the... I'm thinking of one in particular that this was a couple of years ago now, but Stephen Collins, who is an illustrator for The Guardian, I can't remember the publisher, but they brought over – it had been originally published by some UK publisher, Jonathan Cape. That's it's a big UK publisher, and I couldn't remember the name of it. And I got an email one day asking if I would be interested in reviewing this book. I never heard of it. I wasn't familiar with Collins, and I said, you know what, sure. I could always use some more comics. And it ended up being one of my favorite comics of that year, too. And what is the name of it? I'm blanking because I'm a terrible person. the Gigantic Beard That Was Evil. That's the one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I ended up really enjoying that. So it's always nice when, a publicist, is keeping their ear to the ground of people writing about comics, people talking about comics, and they reach out to introduce you to, a book that you might not have discovered otherwise. It's one of the joys of talking about comics in public.
Yeah. And, you know, another occasion where this happened to us, or at least it happened to me because Andy couldn't be a part of this interview, was a little more than a year ago. Someone at Avery Hill, who is it's a UK publisher that I'd never heard of before getting this email, contacted us at the Comics Alternative to ask if we may be interested in reviewing or interviewing for our podcast someone by the name of Tilly Walden. And if that name sounds familiar, is because this year she was a big winner at the Ignatz Awards. In fact, she won in a couple of categories. So, but this was her first book, and The End of Summer had not even been released yet. So they sent me a review copy of The End of Summer. I really enjoyed that and had a great time talking with Tilly on the show. And in fact, her interview on the Comics Alternative was the very first interview that she did as, I guess, a professional artist. And she was 19 years old at the time. So, as someone who was old enough to be her father, I felt a little strange doing that interview. But it was a lot of fun. And now here we are a little over a year later, and she has wide name recognition, especially when it comes to small press comics. So, you know, we're just proud that she was our first interview, or that we were her first interview. And so that's another one of those occasions where someone contacts us. We didn't know about their work before, and voila, something that we're impressed by. And then earlier this year, something happened with the book In the Sounds and Seas by Marnie Galloway. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not. Her name sounds familiar, but I'm not familiar with that book.
Okay, yeah. Marty lives in Chicago, so I know some of our friends and co-hosts who are in the Chicagoland area, like Gene Cannenberg, knew who Marnie was. But I didn't know who she was, and I got a review copy of her book back in May, I think it was, In the Sounds and Seas from One Piece Books.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know about the book, hadn't heard of her before. It was a wordless graphic novel. I read it, really enjoyed it. And in fact, this was a 2012 Zurich Award winner.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures of it right now, and it looks fantastic.
Right. And so I got in touch with Marnie and said, do you want to be on the Comics Alternative?
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest is interview history.
Yeah, I should try and check out that interview and the Tilly Walden interview. Because Tilly Walden is I think, a fantastic cartoonist. Yeah. And Marnie Galloway looks like a fantastic cartoonist as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do a ton of interviews on the Comics Alternative. You know, like I said, most of them are ones that we seek out, but every now and again, you never know. So, you know, as our listeners, if they have any suggestions about people that we may want to interview, hey, get in touch with us and let us know. This could be the next Tilly Walden or Marnie Galloway. So what are you reading right now, Shay?
That was another one that you would mention wanting to talk about, and I was kind of dreading talking about that because I have really not read much outside of the books that I've been reviewing or reading to interview people for Paste and the AV Club. I go to the comic book store every Wednesday or every other Wednesday, and I pick up my comics, but they so far have been acquiring dust in my closet for the last couple months at this point. So I'm really excited to, not that this is kind of the kind of things that you usually talk about on the show, but I'm excited to get into Ta-Nehisi Coates' Run on the Black Panther. I've been buying that, and I got an opportunity to read the first issue before it came out, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was, had some of the hallmarks of a lot of prose writers who make the transition into comics. But I thought there was enough there to really compel me to continue to read the rest of his run, and I've obviously continued to buy it. And I'm excited to catch up on Island, which I buy every month, and I was really enjoying before I basically stopped reading comics. But I have done a bad job of reading the comics that I buy, and so I don't really have much to talk about on this one. What about you? Outside of the stuff you've been reading for the show, have you gotten a chance to read anything of note recently?
Well, I mean, reading things of note, definitely, but my situation is very much like yours in that almost exclusively what I read right now in terms of comics is primarily for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
They could be books that we're definitely going to review specifically for the podcast or, the creators that we're interviewing, or they could be, let's say, earlier works by the creators whose recent works we're about to discuss for a review episode. So it's a rarity now that I get around or at least have the time to read things on my own for my own enjoyment without being prompted by the podcast. That's not to say that I don't enjoy reading the stuff that we read for the podcast. I mean, I definitely do. You know, we have it as a policy from the very beginning of the Comics Alternative that we do not review titles on the show that we wouldn't recommend to others. You know, now we may have some issues or critiques of a comic. In other words, we may not be completely sold on it, but ultimately we would recommend it. And there have been occasions where we think we want to review something for the show. Then we read it and we go, eh, we can't really say much good about this. And so we decide to review something else. All that's to say that I enjoy the stuff that I'm reading for the show. But I guess if I've read comics lately that really aren't specifically titles that we're reading for the show, they have kind of something in an indirect way to do for the show. So, for instance, I usually am not very good at keeping up with titles, series that I start with. Let's say we review a number one issue on the podcast, and then, like for instance, Fred Van Lente's Weird Detective, right? So back in the summer, we reviewed the first issue of that. I think I read the second issue, but I didn't go on to read the subsequent issues. But because we're planning on doing both a horror show for Halloween, around Halloween, and the upcoming two-part crime series, I wanted to go back and catch up with some of those titles that I had, you know, read the first one or two issues of that we reviewed on the show. And Weird Detective was one of those. Another one of those titles was Diggle's Control from Dynamite, which I absolutely love. I mean, I'm a big fan of crime comics, but those are two titles that I've recently been catching up with that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I was the most recent comics that I've read, I completely forgot about until for some reason, when you were talking, I was reminded I think I mentioned earlier on the episode, my memory is terrible today. I was in New York last weekend, and when I go to New York, I like to visit Kinokuniya, which is a Japanese bookstore right across the street from Bryant Park. Anyone who lives in New York, anyone listening who lives in New York or visits New York, I highly, highly recommend going there. It's a phenomenal bookstore. But on the second floor, they have the comics. And it's a really fantastically well-stocked comic book store. But they also have, about half of the store is devoted to untranslated manga. And when I go to Kinokuniya, I like to just go and pick up stuff that looks cool. Stuff that just like, you know, the cover looks fantastic. Or, you know, maybe it's a manga that hasn't been translated, but I've heard about, I've seen images from, and I'm just, you know, I gotta have this. I gotta look at this because it's the art in it is fantastic. So last time I was there, I picked up an untranslated Akira Toriyama manga and an untranslated Taiyo Matsumoto manga. And this time again, I picked up another Matsumoto book that it's the second volume of this series. I don't know what the series is because I can't read Japanese. I've never seen it before. I don't think it's ever been translated into English, and that's fantastic. And I also picked up the 12th volume of some manga that is about like mystical like obstetricians. It's a very weird, it's a very weird comic, but it's beautiful looking. Those
mystical
are the two comics.
Obstetricians. It's a weird take on Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I was just kind of going down the aisles and it caught my eye and I was like, oh, this looks really fantastic. I should get this. And I looked at I can't read the Japanese title, but under the Japanese title is some English text that says something like, I've actually got it right here. Let me read to you what it says because it's very strange. It says, childbirth is not a disease, but we don't know what may happen. Therefore, we need an obstetrician. And it seemed very weird. It seemed good looking. And so I picked it up. And those are the two comics that I have been enjoying lately. Comics that I can't totally make heads or tails of, but that look really beautiful. And that's actually an exercise that I recommend to people if you're ever – you know, in Europe or can buy Italian or Franco-Belgian or Spanish comics that haven't been translated, I absolutely recommend picking up something that you can't necessarily follow the narrative of, you can't read the words of, but that looks beautiful. Mm. It's something I enjoy, and I think everybody else should get in on this too.
Well, you know, as you were talking just now, it occurred to me, it caused me to think of two other titles that I have been, or titles and or series that I've read recently that aren't specifically books that we've discussed on any of the Comics Alternative shows. And you're right, it would be an interesting exercise in picking them up, even though you can't read the language. Now, I've read mm-hmm. English translations of these, but mm-hmm. one that I read just yesterday, in fact, is the second Tyler Cross book. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Fabien Nury, mm-hmm. a French creator, but he has a series that he does with the artist Bruno, based on this character, this crime noir character called Tyler Cross. And mm-hmm. on the very, very recent Eurocomics episode that Edward Govan and I just recorded, we looked at the first volume of the Tyler Cross book, which is called Tyler Cross Blackrock. And I really enjoyed that book. And so, but that came out, I think, originally in French 2013. It was translated digitally into English last year. But that got me thinking and interested in the second Tyler Cross book, which is called Angola, in which was published in English from Europe Comics as the publisher this year. Mm-hmm. And so yesterday I read Tyler Cross Angola and really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I'd highly recommend. And then something else that I've been keeping up with, and this is interesting because it's manga, and you and I have not discussed this on any of the manga episodes. I've been keeping up as best as I can with Sui Ishida's Tokyo Ghoul.
Mm-hmm.
And I just recently, last week, in fact, from DCB Service, got Volume 8 of Tokyo Ghoul. Mm-hmm. So I need to read that. I've read 7. And I better read 8 sooner rather than later, because I think next week volume number 9 of Tokyo Ghoul comes out.
Yeah, that's one that you'd mentioned wanting to talk about on the manga episode, but I haven't gotten a chance to read that. But it looks really fantastic. It looks really good.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think it would be fun for us to talk about it. But okay, you and I already have mapped out what we're going to be doing on the manga show, I think, for the rest of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time we get into 2017, Tokyo Ghoul will probably be up to maybe volume 10. And at that point, it's like a lot for you to catch up on.
So, yeah. I know we've already committed to one secret long-term project that we have to prepare for next year. But one day we should... I've long joked about sitting down and reading all of Naruto, and maybe one day we can do a manga podcast that's just me talking about Naruto.
Yeah. Well, you know, before we close out this week's regular review show, let's tease a bit what you and I are going to be discussing later this month with the October manga series. And you and I have decided to look at not just two, but several manga mm-hmm. horror titles.
That's right. And one we mentioned in the last manga episode, but I am still excited about the fact that I finally have an excuse to go out and buy a copy of and read Hell Baby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very excited to read Hell Baby. And then we're going to cover Junji Ito, which we've talked about on the show before. But he is, I think a favorite of ours. And another series whose name I am having trouble recalling at the moment.
Well, there's a new series coming out from Kodansha, and mm-hmm. Black Museum.
Black Museum.
That's
yeah.
right. Now, I'm assuming that we'll discuss this because Kodansha Publicity said that they would send us copies. We haven't seen it yet, but mm-hmm. from the description, it's perfect for Halloween, you know, the emphasis yeah. on horror. So we'll probably, if we can get a copy in time, look at that. But there are a variety of other titles that we have discussed the possibility of including in that episode. But we'll see. Just know that the October manga show is going to be jam-packed, and it is going to be horrific.
Yeah, I am – I'm looking forward to it. I always like getting a chance to read horror manga.
Yeah, I do as well. So that's what we have to tease for late in October. But we hope that you have enjoyed our makeshift episode for this week. And I'm, again, thank you, Shay, for stepping in when Kunkka couldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad Andy is okay. He wasn't hurt by the hurricane. And I'm glad I was able to step in. And hopefully my voice wasn't too unsettling for regular listeners.
No, it was just fine. And I'll pass on the kind words to Andy. And if our listeners want to get in touch with Kunkka and let him know that they're thinking of him, well, you can email him at andy@comicsalternative.com. But, you know, before you do that, make sure that you head on over to the website of our sponsor, which is Discount Comic Book Service, because then you can pre-order a lot of great comics at wonderful discounts. And then when you contact Andy, you can say, I hope you're doing okay, you're not flooded, and guess what I'll be reading soon. So definitely check out DCBService.com. And after you do get your comics there, get in touch with us and let us know what you think about this week's fill-in episode. If you go to the website, comicsalternative.com, you'll find that you can leave us a voice message from the comfort of your own mobile device or desktop computer by using SpeakPipe. Or you can call us the old-fashioned way by picking up the phone and dialing 415-3-COMICS. That's 415-326-6427.
If you want to email us, you can email us at twoguys@comicsalternative.com. If you aren't unsettled by the sound of my voice and you want to get in touch with me specifically, you can email me at shay@comicsalternative.com. And Derek, if they want to email you, how can they do that?
By emailing me at derek@comicsalternative.com. You can also find us all over social media, such as Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, Google+, Goodreads, Pinterest, and YouTube. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. You can stream us on Stitcher. You can also find us on TuneIn, on Spotify, and on iHeartRadio. And if you're an Android user, on Google Play Music. But you can find every single one of our podcast episodes, as well as the reviews and comics-related commentary that we post on our blog, simply by going to our website, comicsalternative.com. So a lot of ways of people to get in touch with us.
That's right.
That's right. And we do appreciate your contacts. So, you know, if you're someone like Luanga Nuame and Scott Bufus, definitely let us know the kind of comics that you're creating as well. So thank you for both Lou and Scott for sending us copies of your comics. We had a great time discussing them. And until next week, I'm Derek.
And I'm Shay.
See you later.